Back at it with you again right here on Connecticut Today, kicking off a brand new month, Tuesday, December 1st, in the 3 o'clock hour. A return visit from Brian Boyd, one of the best security analysts going. He talked about world hotspots and the recent killing of an Iranian nuclear scientist. I also had some thoughts in the show about what Vanderbilt University did using a female college football kicker this past weekend. This is interesting to talk about that. Welcome back. A friend of the program here, a 30-plus year professional intelligence analyst, counterterrorism specialist, former Green Beret, part of the leadership of the Joint Special Operations Command, overseeing the Special Forces, SEAL Team 6, and Delta Force. He also served in the Departments of Defense, Justice, and Treasury, regularly appears on radio and TV all over the country. His website is BoydIntelligence.com, America's premier intelligence analyst. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian Boyd. Brian, Paul here again in Connecticut. How are you?
Good to hear your voice. How's the weather there? Cold?
No, it's getting a little colder. We had a whopper of a storm that moved through here yesterday, but it's still light jacket weather, so I can deal with that, Brian. You know I can deal with it.
Well, I'm down here talking to you from Florida. Went all the way down to 60 degrees today, so just make you feel bad.
That's horrible. Yeah, means you may have a golf shirt on today.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, Brian, a couple of days ago we get the news that Iran's preeminent nuclear scientist is taken out. Some of the reports in the British press saying it was 62 people involved here. First of all, what was your reaction when you saw what happened?
I was not surprised at it. I was expecting something to happen about a week or two ago when the press got wind that Trump was asking for options to conduct the strike against Iran and the rest of his staff, including the new Secretary of Defense acting and all the rest of the people in the White House cabinet, all advised him against it because they discovered that Iran had gotten 12 times the amount of uranium necessary for what they claim they're going to do. So this made the world panic. The Israelis, on the other hand, are not going to sit there and analyze it as a political decision. To them, it's absolute survival. And so they've been constantly involved in doing various undercover activities and surreptitious activities into Iran. Some of these explosions in their plants have all been part of the Israeli response. And so when this assassination attempt occurred, it didn't surprise me. I knew something was going to do it, but they decided, I guess, to go after the chief scientist because he was the guy that would set the program back the most. And they don't have the limitations on assassination like our country does. We're not allowed to assassinate. So that's we're different. The Reagan administration took the ability to assassinate people during their executive order during his administration. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it was the Israelis. I don't think they needed to ask us permission for it. They just took care of business.
When you have targets like this, Brian, I mean, obviously, this is researched. Obviously, they track this guy's movements, both surreptitiously, electronically, and all that. So, what would your guess be, Brian, as to how much preparation, the basic files, the basic information before they gave a go on this? How long do you watch a potential target like this? Weeks, months, years? How does that work?
Well, you're correct in all three, weeks, months, and years in the Special Forces community, as well as conventional military units in our country. We prepare what's called target folders. And in the target folder, whether it's a target like a facility or it's a target of an airfield or whatever, when we do war planning or in the business of counterterrorism, we're always looking at and creating profiles. You may have remembered during Saddam Hussein's era before the Gulf War, they gave out playing cards to the soldiers. And each of the playing cards had a different face on it so they could recognize all the players, including Saddam Hussein and his two sons. And the old joke was the ace of spades was Saddam Hussein. So that's how they prepare soldiers for it when they're out there doing movements and they're out there trying to conduct war. And when it comes to high-profile targets, like those who affect the danger that's out there, you know, threatening Israel or America. These target folders are put into action. I don't know if it helps you any, but way back when, during the planning for World War II, long before we got involved, Eisenhower was known as a major back then before he was a general, and he had produced an old war plan called Operation Warlord.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Operation Overlord.
Yeah.
And that was put into play because we had no war planning. We weren't planning to go into Europe. But as a result of the bombing of Pearl Harbor and the Axis nations, we got dragged into the European war. And they dusted that off. No kidding. They dusted off those shells. And that's what they used to plan the invasion of Normandy.
Fascinating stuff.
We're doing a few of it. Yeah, it's much more sophisticated today because we plan for these things well in advance, including hostage rescue missions, which goes back to your question. Those are only weeks of planning. When a sudden person is taken hostage, we have a very short time frame. Then we got to react, knowing that we probably have information on the group that conducted it. But then we've got to move quick because the intelligence is perishable and very short.
Brian, hang on. We'll be right back with you. This is fascinating stuff. He's America's premier intelligence analyst. The website, BoydIntelligence.com. More with Brian Boyd straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. He is America's premier intelligence analyst. The website, BoydIntelligence.com. A few more minutes with Brian Boyd, military and D.C. veteran, talking about the operation that took out Iran's number one nuclear scientist. They say the likely father of their nuclear program, at least on the military side, which they say they don't have, but we know what's coming out of Tehran these days. Brian Boyd with us for a few more minutes. So, Brian, when you took a look at all the press accounts and some of the foreign paper coverage, it was excellent and showing, you know, the terrain and the map of where this happened. What's your estimate as to, and your ideas, if you can give us, as to how this was actually done with number of people and positioning, and how does special ops do something like this?
Well, that's a big question. There's probably more information out there in magazines and publications that are all about special ops. I've seen half a dozen Time magazine special issues on the last 2 years talking about special ops and how we do it and the kind of weapons and all that sort of thing. But in this particular case, it takes a lot of planning. You have to have people on the inside who are close enough to the target. You have to have sources of information in his circle of friends. There are Iranians that are normal people that don't subscribe to the Khomeini's heavy-handed Islamic ultra-conservative view of the world. There are people in Iran that want to go back to the Western behavior that they had at one time. And there are people that are vying for positions and power. So you've got a lot of sources of information within the regime. And then you have to have specialized people who now to move from point A to point B. I give talks on the history of various missions that we've conducted. If you look back during the Obama administration, the planning that went in to go after bin Laden was still special forces people, you know, part of the JSOC group. When Trump activated the same group of people, it's still the same planning. The question is the intelligence value. In Bob Gates's book called Duty, he talked about the voting process in the cabinet when they went after bin Laden. He said the intelligence was only 40% accurate that he was in that Pakistani compound. And he said both he and Biden voted against it. And his remarks have been played in the news a lot lately, saying that's the first time that Biden and Gates agree with Biden, because he said Biden's always wrong on defense. And that's been played out many times in the recent political foray. But during the Trump administration, the intelligence is better. So when it comes to doing this, you have to have very good intelligence, whether it's open source, covert operatives, people that are on the inside that can give you some inside sight to it. You have overhead intelligence, you have listening intelligence. So there's a variety of ways you can do it. Believe it or not, it's easier to penetrate them than it is to penetrate narcotics traffickers.
Wow. Jeez. So you said what I immediately thought, Brian, when I saw this and I was seeing some of the coverage saying, Well, geez, they have to have people inside. So as dictatorial as we think some of these regimes are, Brian, whether it's North Korea or Iran or China, you just verified something I thought, that at least at some level, you've got to have people on the inside, correct, working on these things, or they're just not going to work.
Yeah, the whole world of spies operates that way. But I think the greatest majority of information and intelligence, particularly on soft targets like a scientist, which is not a protected compound below ground or something like that, like a reactor being hidden, they're relatively easy to find. But you can find them through overhead satellites. You can find it by intercepting phone conversations, that sort of thing. There is a lot of ways you can track people. But just like when they went after General Soleimani, they've been following him for years. He was considered the most dangerous person to kill more Americans, and killing students whatever, rioting, wanting to have freedom in Iran. And when he went and left his country, and he is in Baghdad, now he's outside his country. He's in another place where he's not supposed to be. And he was a relatively easy target because he was traveling around in the open, and it wasn't a difficult thing to target him. But the point I'm going to make there is that the Trump administration moved quickly. You asked me how much long it takes to do this. They've been following the guy. But when he was suddenly out in the open in the Baghdad airport, we knew he was planning missions against Americans. And it was just a question of moving quickly and affecting a drone strike, which was extremely accurate, much better during the last administration because we're much more sophisticated. And they took him out. And within half of a minute, the Delta Force and or the SEALs in combination moved up in a car and got the cell phone, the watch, and his ring to verify that it was him.
Wow.
That's pretty sophisticated stuff.
And
it was one of the funny things, within about 50 feet away, was a palm tree. There wasn't any shrapnel. So just think about the accuracy of that drone.
That's amazing.
It's not like the old days.
No. Hey, Brian, looking ahead now to the Biden camp, the Biden administration, he still hasn't picked a defense secretary yet. I know the odds are, I see this Michelle Flournoy, who seems to be pretty well qualified for it. There are detractors and supporters on both sides. But, Brian, give me your thoughts here in a minute or two on what do you think we have going forward here for the next 4 years for the Pentagon, for the Biden group? What do you think? A lot of these intelligence people I see already, national security people, these are a lot of old names.
Yeah, when it comes to the intelligence community, they're pretty much the same people. It's made up mostly of professionals. If I can step backwards, the reason Gates was kept as the director of the CIA's Secretary of Defense is because he was a professional intelligence analyst like me, but he was part of a sophisticated professional group. He wasn't a political appointee, although it was a political position. And he went through both Obama and Bush's administration. That's why his book is so interesting, because he sees it on both sides of the fence when he was working as the intelligence guy. This new administration with Biden, I'm looking at a variety of these people. I'm very happy with the acting Secretary of Defense. He's Special Forces, which obviously makes me happy. But it tells you that the focus on the Defense Department, with Esper being moved out, is on Special Forces and counterterrorism, which is the real threat. A real threat today, number one, is Iran. It isn't Russia. It's Iran, because they want to annihilate the world, and they are involved in a lot of activities like they recently were in the East in Africa, killing a lot of people that are Christians. And then you've got other people in that world that I think are very sophisticated. You got Iran, number one. Number two is China. And the big focus of our military and our intelligence community is cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. And that's extremely hard to fight. We're kind of behind the eight ball on that as a country. The Chinese are way ahead of us on it. So are the Iranians. They got thousands of people learning to hack our systems. So it depends on who the Biden people pick. Hopefully they'll pick or keep the Special Forces acting secretary there. I'm trying to think of his name while I'm talking to you. My brain just slipped away. You may remember, I'm just trying to think of his name while I'm talking to you. It's Christopher Miller. I'm sorry. There you go. Christopher okay. Miller. Mm-hmm. So, it's going to depend. And the personality there will sort of set the tone. And I just hope that they can keep focused on the terrorism issue, because that is the biggest threat. It's not going to be a land war.
Yeah.
We're not going to have a problem from North Korea. And the question is Iran and China. And Russia is still the boogeyman.
Yeah, yeah. Brian, fascinating stuff, as always. Boyd Intelligence, BOYDintelligence.com, America's premier intelligence analyst, having a rough day because it's only 60 degrees in Florida. Brian, somehow you'll pull through. We know you'll pull through. Brian, be good. If we don't speak to you, happy holidays, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. God bless America.
Appreciate it, and I agree with that, too. Brian Boyd there, BoydIntelligence.com. I don't know whether you saw this. You probably saw it over the weekend. The Vanderbilt University football team is horrible. They stink. Vandy is 0-8. They're 0-8 overall. They're 0-8 in their conference. They stink on ice like dead fish, okay? So what Vanderbilt did, I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, it got, and it continues to get just oodles of PR coverage here. They brought Sarah Fuller onto the football team because I guess they had a bunch of injuries. They couldn't find a guy who could kick, whatever. I find that hard to believe. But they brought Sarah Fuller onto the football team. Now, she's not a newbie. She is on the Vanderbilt women's soccer team, which is very good. She's a goalkeeper on the Vanderbilt women's soccer team, and as goalkeepers go, they need to be able to have a very strong leg because, in you know, after they make a save or start a play up from the defensive zone, they will usually kick it a long way. So what they did is they brought her onto the team for Saturday's game, and I guess she kicked off once or twice. Whatever, she wasn't hurt. She was part of the team. They got just scads, oodles of PR on this. I mean, this is the kind of a thing that you can't put a dollar figure on. They probably got between newspaper and internet and sports outlets and radio and TV. Vanderbilt University got just an hundreds of millions of dollars worth of free PR for this thing. In a sense, it's a stunt. It was a stunt. And apparently they're going to stick with it, is what I read here. One article I'm reading here, Vanderbilt said to stick with trailblazing female kicker Sarah Fuller. A college player became the first woman to compete for a Power 5 team. Fuller will travel with the Commodores for their game against Georgia. Now, let me ask you something. And please don't scream at me, you're being sexist, you're being misogynistic. No, it's an honest question. Do you think if Vanderbilt wasn't 0-7 last week, let's say they were, 7-0 or 6-1, and they were near the top of the Eastern Conference of the SEC with Florida, Georgia, and Missouri, and they lost their kickers. Do you think, honestly, do you think they would have gotten or would have asked for a member of the women's soccer team to kick for them? No matter how good she might be, no matter if she was a bench warmer or a consensus first team NCAA All-American headed for maybe the U.S. national women's soccer team. I think you know the answer to that. This poor woman, and I understand she's embracing it, and it's probably a thrill for her to do this, and God bless her. I never besmirch anyone for taking an offer, for taking a job offer, for taking an offer on a sports team, or for taking anything offered to them that makes them happy. That's not what my issue is. And she kicked off once or twice. I saw the highlight, whatever. But does she realize she's part of a, I hate to use the word here, but a PR stunt? I mean, to me, and you can call and tell me I'm a jerk. That's fine. 203-333-9422. Hundreds of people have done that in their lives, have been right. But is this not belittling her to some point? Yes, I know she's a very good soccer player. But again, I ask the question, if Vanderbilt going into last week's game was 0-7, soon to be 0-8 after they got their rear ends handed to them again, they've lost 8 in a row. If they were instead of 0-7, they were again, you know, 6-1 or 7-0 or 5-2. Do you think that they would have used a member of the women's soccer team? You know what the answer is to that. And I'm only bringing this up because it frosts me off the number of people who even bring this up and say, hey, is this really a proper thing to do? Is she being used here a little bit? Oh, my God, you can't say that. Now, I know in high schools, every so often you will find a high school football team with a woman or young woman or a girl kicker. That we've seen or heard about that. Sometimes kicking is not that easy on the high school level, and there will be a strong-legged member of the girls' soccer team that will do it. You've read about that. But on a Division I college level, and now they say they're sticking with her. They're going to travel. The Commodores will take her on the road to Georgia. And again, if she wants to do that, God bless her. I hope she gets an endorsement deal, whatever. But this is a circus act, and it's sad because she's being used as a pawn because a lousy football team is just using her to make what point? I don't know. I don't know. One of the coaches said she'll be with us on the trip to Georgia, and we're going to put the best people out there. If she's our best option, we'll continue with her, and we'll do the best we can for the team. Now, coach, you mean to tell me on the entire Vanderbilt campus, you can't get a guy, if you sent out a university-wide email, and said, varsity football team looking for kicker. Anyone with high school kicking experience or soccer experience, please turn out at practice, wear shorts, a T-shirt, and your kicking shoes tomorrow by 4 p.m. You would have, trust me, there are plenty of guys on the campus of any college who played high school football, or even maybe played college football at another level and transferred, you would have them there. Here's my point. Let's not go all crazy about this. Now, is the point here to make a statement about equality? Fine. Do that. I don't care. But we have this tendency sometime in society to look at this stuff and say, oh, it's amazing, when we don't sit back and say, wait a minute now. Would this person, man or woman, be on the team if the team was any good? I mean, it's like a few years ago, and I looked at it with, you know, some interest. You know, I'm a hockey nut, hockey fan, former hockey broadcaster, maybe again in the future, who knows. And you remember when the Tampa Bay Lightning, early in their NHL existence, had a woman play goal for them in the second period of a game. Manon Raume was her name. She wasn't bad. But was there any clue that she was going to make the team? No, of course not. It was a PR stunt. And yeah, people like PR. People like a good circus act, I guess, as the great Bridgeport native Mr. P.T. Barnum said all those years ago.